What do Shang-Chi's after credit scenes mean for the future of the MCU? Ooh, stay tuned and find out as we discuss that and more on Only Stupid Answers. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Only Stupid Answers. This is a show where we talk about, where we answer your questions about movies, TV shows, comic books, and Shang-Chi. We did a spoiler-free discussion last week. We're going to get into the spoilers and the after-credit scenes and all that. And with me, as always, is Roxy Stryer, the master of Kung Fu. Roxy, give us your best Kung Fu tip.
In Kung Fu, what you should do is learn from the masters.
Yes, you go to them and learn from the masters.
Yes, and typically the masters of Kung Fu are little white blonde girls. So just don't forget about us when you're choosing your master.
Don't forget about them. So let's, before we get into it, we always like to start our episodes with what we are into this week. And Roxy, I wanted to revisit something that you had mixed feelings about when you first watched it. You have since completed the new season of Gossip Girl, and I want you to tell me about it.
DJ.
Yes.
So I guess we are at the mid-season break.
Okay.
I'm unclear on how HBO Max is doing their shows.
Okay.
It seems like it's all over the place. It's not like a Netflix where we get it, or the Hulu with the three. And then I don't get how HBO Max is doing it, but it seems more like traditional television in the sense that we are at the mid season. This was announced as like the mid season finale.
Okay.
So we are halfway through, I guess, what is the season of the show? I think it's only been six episodes so far. And I will say this here. I would still cut off my arm to be on this show. So please, oh God, don't let this come back and bite me in the butt. But like, holy shit, DJ, what is happening?
I don't know. You have to tell me.
I can't believe this is a show. I can't believe we're accepting it as a show. It is the premise of the show, as I started to tell you last time, is the same as it was before, except this time we know who Gossip Girl is, and Gossip Girl is the teachers.
Yes.
And the teachers are out to get the students, and they are doing so by like taking naked pictures of them and like
cool
outing their lives and like destroying the sibling relationships. And you're supposed to like these teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And I just am like, but what you're doing is like pedophilia. And so effed up. One of the teachers is sleeping with one of the students.
Classic.
Like it's just so gross that I don't know how to move forward with it, but I clearly watched every episode. There's something about it that like you can't look away, but at the same time, I feel like I'm hate watching it. It's just so effed up, and not in like a way that it's acknowledging it's effed up. It's effed up in a way that you're supposed to root for people who are doing things that are not just illegal, but wrong. People do illegal things, but you know, if you're dealing drugs on a show, I'm not like, I hate you. Like when you are taking through a window pictures of minors and then posting them on the internet, I don't like your character.
having a hard time rooting for you.
Having a really hard time rooting for you, or like feeling like they're like, I'm so torn. It's like kind of similar to what we talked about last week, DJ. Or just do the right thing because it's easier to do and the right thing. So I just am so confused on where this show is going. They have a lot of big lofty goals. They're trying to make commentary on like some major like racial things. And like a lot of the characters are gender fluid or sexually fluid. And they're trying to make like big commentary on things that I don't know that they're ready to make commentary on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, what are you trying to say about this? And I also don't know that you are the show to do it.
Yes.
But maybe I don't know. It's so uncomfortable to watch.
So that's a recommend from Roxy, it sounds like to me. That's my takeaway from that. Now, Roxy, I know you like the cringe, right?
Not that kind of cringe.
That kind of cringe, but I do have something for you. Roxy, have you watched on HBO Max, have you watched The White Lotus?
No, everybody keeps telling me about this.
I think you'll love it. I think you'll love it because it definitely...
You know, there's some big people in it.
Yeah, so it's written directed by Mike White. And it stars Jennifer Coolidge, who's been in everything, and she's so fucking funny. Connie Britton, Alexandra Daddario, Jake Lacy, Natasha Rothwell, Steve Zahn, who's, I love Steve Zahn, I think he's great. Sydney Sweeney, you're a fan of Euphoria, right? She's on that show, yeah. Sydney Sweeney. She's really good in this. So like a bunch of really great people, but it follows a bunch of like wealthy vacationers on like this high-end Hawaiian resort. And it basically kind of deconstructs their privilege within the context of this island that has been taken from the people that live there. And so it's kind of like a black comedy satire that I think is really incredible. The cast is so great because most of these people in the show are the fucking worst, but they behave in a way that like the people that are fucking worse than our lives behave. Like they are completely oblivious to how much they're the worst. And they do an interesting, I was just talking to Lon on Twitter about it. They do something really interesting where the people behave in such a human relatable way that it helps you realize the way that you people in general kind of paper over their own privilege, like justify their own little like privileged behavior. That I think is really interesting. And so it's 6 episodes of the first season. It's kind of an anthology. So this was supposed to be like a standalone thing. Next season we'll go to a different White Lotus hotel somewhere else in the world. I think with the shows that you've liked, Roxy, I think you'll really respond well to this show. If the criticisms I will give is, we do spend a little bit of time with some native people on the island, but not enough, and they never become like fully fleshed out people. And I think this is more about like deconstructing white privilege. But I also think, when we talk about you could just make a show not centered on white people. Like I think like, yeah.
Deconstructing it, we're also pedestaling it.
Yeah, exactly. We're also like spending time with it.
Looking at the cast. It is a very white cast.
Yeah. And they deconstruct, and it's really smart too, because it's not just like, it finds a way to deconstruct like a lot of neoliberal ideas. It's not just like, it's really nuanced in the way it tackles the characters, but I do think the mileage I have left in watching shows about white people being the worst is limited and shrinking. Like this show gets a pass because of how well it's scripted, but it's like I think we could just write shows that aren't solely focused on white people. Like it's what you're doing it to comment on how bad white people are, but we're aware.
The cover of this looks like a movie.
It's great. I check it out. I'm very interested to hear your thoughts on it. It's interesting. My wife's just started watching 9 Perfect Strangers on Hulu, and it's interesting how that show starts off almost like exactly the same way, although it's clear that the show's intentions are very different. I recommend checking it out, and I think the cast is such a good job, and it's really smartly written. I enjoyed it. So go check it out. All right. One more thing for what we're into before we get to the main event. And this is something that actually you and I both watched, but I wanted to touch back on it because you're caught up and I'm caught up and I wasn't going to watch it. And you suggested it. And so I watched it and I enjoyed it. Let's talk about Dave. The end of season 2 is wrapped up. You're caught up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm caught up as well. I thought the finale was really good.
So good. And good in a, everything about this show is ridiculous and silly and whack, but then there's also heart to it.
Yeah.
And the finale really focused, especially the last couple of minutes, on the heart of this show. And I think for both of us, I don't want to speak for you, but Data is one of my favorite characters just on any show.
Yeah.
I think he is so, so not only just written well, but the actor, the whole thing. Data just works for me on a way that a lot of characters do not, because he just feels so real.
100%.
And so I think it's smart. The more we lean into him, the more I love the show. And the finale choosing to be, I don't know if I would say Data-centered, but at least data half centered or whatever. Yeah. That worked. I loved this season. It's not getting as much love as season one, but for me, I loved season one. I love season two. I find something in every episode of this show that really touches my soul and makes me spit take laugh so loud that, like, if you're doing both those things for me in an episode, then how can I even say anything other than I think it's one of the best shows on TV? I'm so into it.
Yeah, well, before I talk any about finale, I do want to mention the second to last episode where Dave kind of goes into, I'm going to use the name, it's a sensory deprivation tank. It's a float. That's what they're called. He goes into a float and he goes into his innermost mind and he runs into like this bald, like a powder white version of himself. And watching that, I was like, man, we need to get Dave Byrd to play like a supervillain in something.
He's Lex Luthor.
He's Lex Luthor 100%.
Like, oh shit, he's the best Lex Luthor we haven't gotten yet.
Like, yeah. It's like, yes. this is what Zack Snyder wanted to do with Jesse Eisenberg's Lex, but better. Like, this is what he was shooting for.
I couldn't have, oh my God, DJ, I'm so glad you said that. I thought the exact same thing, and I was thinking, how smart of him to showcase himself in this way, because I never would have thought of that otherwise. And then I watched that, and I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. We need to do it. And also, I think it's smart, too, because I think one of the things that I struggle with on this show that I think Donald Glover smartly avoided in Atlanta is Donald Glover didn't cast himself as rapper Donald Glover. You know what I mean? And so there's a little bit of a distance. So there's times in this show where Dave is obviously behaving in a privileged way and selfishly. But there's always a lingering question of like, there's this feeling of like a little bit of a justification. It's like, yeah, this is not good, but he's kind of right. And it's like, I don't think he is. And I think the show thinks he is, and I don't agree. But I feel like part of that feeling comes from the fact that it's Dave playing Dave, and so there is this sense of like so in moments like that where he gets to distance himself from it, and in the finale, I think one of the smartest things in the finale that kind of blew my mind was when Gata's sister calls Gata Dave. Like, that's how his family refers to him, and then the title comes up, and it's one of the smartest ways to puncture this idea of like, yeah, Dave is the protagonist, but everybody's the protagonist of their own thing. Gata's his own protagonist. And it's such an elegant way of illustrating that, yeah, this Dave is about Dave Byrd, but it could also just as easily be about Gata and his struggles in that. And the scene where Dave goes to confront Gata because he thinks he's having an episode.
Right.
And Gata's like, no, man, you're just kind of a fucking asshole. And he points to the room where he's like, I'm doing this for the love of it. It was just such a great, like, I thought the season really summed up Dave's arc this season really smartly, because he really hasn't done a good job. Like, we deconstructed a little bit when he goes in the flow and goes into his like own headspace. But this was really like the last, like, I guess, ego death, kind of like, it's not all about me. I don't need to get so wrapped up in this shit. I just need to do what I love with people that I love. And the way they wrapped it up, it's interesting, because it's like, actually, this would be a really great way to end the show. Like, if the show ended here, this is a really good note. It feels like, this really feels like it wraps up both seasons really well.
Yeah, the way that I slightly disagree with you in terms of, I think the show is so self-aware, and I think that Dave is the main antagonist as well. Like, I don't think that they ever think that he is in the right. I think that they think that he is providing a life for other people that might not be provided. And by that, there is a dynamic shift.
Yeah.
But I think that they really dive into like what a fuck he is sometimes and his privilege and what that ends up looking like. So I really think that they do that, but I agree with you that in this episode, everything about you being the hero of your own story and you being at least at the center of your own story. And with Gata, I loved that. And then for spoilers on this, but the final moment when Dave is saying like, do you know, has anybody talked to Gata? And we assume obviously that Gata's at home.
Yeah.
And that that's what he's doing. We're flashing to him that he's watching it or whatever. And when he comes up, I like wanted to cry.
Yeah.
Because do the right thing, people. And Dave often doesn't do the right thing. And in this moment he did, and it can change, doing the right thing can change somebody else's life.
Yeah.
not even by doing like the above and beyond, just the right, it's the right thing to do. And yeah. So I don't know. I really like, it just touched me in a way that I was like, I just root for Data so hard. And when Dave does the right thing, I feel proud of him because he's such a fuck most of the time.
For real. And again, I think that's such a smart note to end on. And you're right. And it's something interesting about watching Data act, because the impression you get it is that he's not acting, like this is just who he, because it's, again, it's the character that is himself and whatever. But then the emotional areas that he's able to get into, specifically the episode in season one where we find out about his bipolar, and this, it's like, this is, it's just really like, oh my God, like it's so emotionally engaging. And it's also, I think you make a really good point about what Dave's trying to do with his, what is it, VMAs that he's trying to perform at.
Yeah,
it's so fucking what he's trying to do to make it special is so fucking complicated,
right?
And just doing the right thing with his collaborator and friend is so simple, but still so effective. And it's like that's actually a really good lesson we get, and it's something I'm sorry, a lot of political things have been on my mind recently, so I know I tend to veer into political things, but it doesn't matter the specific political thing, but there's situations going on where it's like, if you just did the decent thing, it would be so significantly less complicated than all the random bullshit we're doing right now.
Yeah, like do the thing that saves the most lives and improves the most lives, and then you would be okay. Like, it's so true, DJ, because he's like, I have to get the skin of a pig on my penis to cover the whole, like all that shit. And it's like, or
just go on stage with your friend and like rap and just tear the house down with your rap and just call it a day.
Yeah. Everybody's like trying to get that viral moment these days. And I think that, I'm with you with everything going on politically speaking and otherwise, just everybody is trying to say everything other than this is the right thing to do. So we're going to do it because it's the right thing to do.
And just, yeah, things are, and I think that's the big lesson at the end of the show, and I think it applies to a lot of things, is this finale specifically, not necessarily the show as a whole, but like, we have a tendency to make things significantly more complicated than they need to be. Mm-hmm. And so just stop it. Just cut it the fuck out. And of course, that plays into Dave as a character because he tends to be so neurotic. And it's like, just get out of your own head. And the other standout episode for me in season two, other than, what's his producer friend? That's an actual producer.
Yeah, it's Andrew San. What the fuck?
No, it's
Are you talking about with the red hair?
No. The big time producer that's like friends with Justin Bieber. Benny Blanco.
The
episode with Benny Blanco is just hilarious. But the episode with Doja Cat, where you see all the stuff as a female artist that she has to deal with, and then you've got the male, all these male artists that are just like stoking their ego and. I thought that episode was actually it looks like it's going one direction that I was like, I don't know if I can deal with this. And then it pivots and ends up being like a lot more smarter and nuanced than I anticipated.
Yeah. What are you thinking about? Because you watched it in such a close amount of time. How do you feel about his relationship with his ex-girlfriend? Like, are you rooting for them? Or
no, I think she's smart when she's like, hey, listen. And I thought that was actually a really devastating but smartly scripted scene where he wants to get back together, and then he gets nervous, and so is the song he has her listen to is like, actually no, this is just going to go on the album. What, and he frames it like he wants to know her permission, but he clearly doesn't. And it's a great moment of like, oh yeah, you haven't learned anything. Like you've learned the minimal amount of things. In one hand, I'd like to see them get back together. In that, I don't see a function for that actress on the show if they're not
right.
And so as somebody that thinks she's talented and would like to see her work more, that would be cool. As narratively, it's like, it's in both of their best interest to not do
like
that.
Like if these were your friends, you would be like,
you've gone too far. I don't think there's backsies on this one. Yeah. What about you? Your lover, love, and shipper of ships.
I know that's the problem because I always root for the main character to get what they want. And he clearly wants her. However, I know he does not deserve her. He has not grown enough for her. And she seems like a great girl. So like, I don't root for it here, but it is strange to have that dynamic where I'm just like, nope. I also really love the episodes this season with him coming up with the girl who's the photographer.
Yeah.
That was really cool too.
Oh, and that was a great moment too, where it's another episode that feels like it's about Dave, but it's really not. It's about her.
Yeah.
And I think that's a smart part of the show, where the focusing on other people's journeys and how it is less breezy as Dave's. Like a lot of it's like Dave falling like ass first into like the biggest fucking record deals. And it's like, this son of a bitch. And so, but this season pulling out of that and being like, here's how it's not as easy for people, other people. And so stuff too, like, I think it's in the first episode of season two where a guy on a bicyclist cuts her off and she literally chases him down to be like, no, I am a good driver. And they don't comment on it. But if anybody knows anything about stereotypes in America, yeah, it's very informative of you. Suddenly that tells you something, experiences she's had in the past that we, as a show, we don't need to stop and explain to you. You just know, like, and Dave is oblivious to it, completely oblivious to it. He has no context of like, why would she possibly do this? And like, come on, man. It literally takes 2 seconds to think about it.
So it does sound like, DJ, you are enjoying the show.
Yeah, I think there are moments. Again, the more we focus on Dave falling ass first into unbelievable success, is not my favorite. The efforts they do. So if you told me, listen, that little tease in the last episode where we call Gata Dave and then the title card comes up is a signal that season three is going to be focused on him. Way on board. But I do think the show is finding a really smart way to dissect all that. So yes. Overall, to answer your question, yes, I did enjoy the show. I appreciate you bringing it up, and I'm glad I started watching it, because I do think it does some really it's smarter than it probably needed to be.
Yeah. And it, because I find these to be the more similar shows of all shows of this type right now, you prefer Rami to Dave?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because I relate more to Rami's situation than mine. Like, being a guy that kind of like is trying to find your way and is kind of struggling with money, I find more relatable than, oh, yeah, I got this record deal, but they're not doing the stuff I want them to do. I more relate to Gata when he's like, you know how many people I know that would literally murder somebody for what you have and you're bitching about it? Like, shut the fuck up and do the thing, man. Like, that I find relating myself to the periphery characters, where I do not necessarily some of the dipshit stuff Rami does, but I find characters like, it's the same reason why I kind of like gravitate more to something like Broad City as opposed to Girls. I find the characters in Broad City much more relatable than anybody in Girls.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Okay.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Uh-oh, what does that transition mean? It probably means that there was an ad break there. But also, now we are going to get into our main topic for today, which is Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. Spoilers. We did non-spoilers last week. Now it is time for full spoilers. So if you haven't watched the movie, get out of here. Don't spoil it for yourself. Go see the movie. Come back. Like I said last week, the synopsis is Shang-Chi is the master of unarmed weaponry-based kung fu, is forced to confront his past after being drawn into the Ten Rings organization, and is directed by Destin Daniel Cretton. Of course, stars Simu Liu, Awkwafina, Tony Leung, Michelle Yeoh, and a bunch of other incredible people. And spoilers, they cast people that I couldn't mention last time, but we're going straight into spoilers. We're operating under the impression that you've watched the movie, you have an opinion about the movie, and we're not going to tell you anything you don't already know. Tim Roth is in here as Abomination. Benedict Wong is in here as Wong. And something I thought was a spoiler, but when I looked it up, is already on IMDb, is Ben Kingsley shows back up as Trevor Slattery. Apparently, the world just knew that. I didn't know it going in.
I did not know it either, and I don't think most of the people who were in our screening DJ knew it.
Yeah, so that was fun, because I don't there's a scene where Tony Leung, who plays Wenwu, or the traditional Mandarin, talks about Trevor Slattery in Iron Man 3, and I don't know, you, Roxy, but he was done having that conversation. I was like, oh, Trevor's dead. Trevor fucking got killed. That's he's dead now. And so when he showed back up, I was like, oh, man, like this is good. And then he's funny. And then the little plush toy shows up, the marketing plush toy shows up. And then he takes them to the place that we spent a good chunk of the movie trying to figure out how to get to. And then Trevor Slattery showing up is actually my demarcation point for where the movie kind of goes off the rails for me.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of where it never quite recovers, and for me. But yeah, so spoilers, we can talk about it now. We can do all the things. Let's get into them spoilies. Do you have any spoiler thoughts that we weren't able to discuss last time that we can discuss now?
Yeah, so I guess just more specifically, I love the majority of this movie. It doesn't go off the rails for me as early as it does for you. It's really, even once we get to the new land and through the forest and we're there and we're meeting all these new people with the aunt and everybody, I'm really still on board.
Yeah.
And even as we're hearing the stories and we're training and we're preparing for the dad to come and all of that, I'm still so on board.
Yeah.
It's not until Dragons.
Dragons. And also for me, my big uh-oh is when we're walking, we're pointing at statues of exposition. It's cultures apparently are big into creating statues that are good for exposition later. And so, it's like, yeah, the Dweller in Darkness. I'm like, what? Why?
Okay, I like was so visually pleased by that part though, because I was just thinking, I think they actually carved these. Like these look real to me. I mean, just the way we were looking at it, I was like, how long did this take? Is this just all CG? These look effing good. Mm-hmm. So whatever. I actually like the statue part, but I'm still so down. But when we leave all humans out of it,
yeah,
and it's not Shang-Chi and his dad fighting right outside, which I thought was great, and it's not the sister doing what she thinks is best, or Awkwafina trying to, when it's just dragon on dragon war.
Yeah.
Or dragon on whatever that other
whatever
thing is.
Whatever the war, thing, the Dweller in Darkness, whatever it is.
My eyes went from this to, like, I could not. Yeah. I could not. It was so frustrating. And then when we were done with that, we came back to family stuff. I love the post credits. I love the mid credits. I love Awkwafina and Simu Liu coming back and sitting at the table and explaining to the friends. Mm-hmm. I love Wong. I love everything that went down before and everything that went down after. But when we are spending like 20 minutes with these dragons,
yeah, these CG
and
dragons,
I don't care about either of them.
Well, because they're not, they have nothing to do with our characters. They don't.
And you know for a fact that they're not going to lose. So mm-hmm. You already know what's going to happen.
Oh my God. And the way they took out the Dweller in the Darkness was the most biggest bullshit shrug of a like, whatever.
The arrow
from Awkwafina, who even jokes about having practiced with an arrow for a day. It's like, I felt like the movie just gave me a big middle finger. Like, we don't give a shit about any of this. Yes, Fuck off.
That was like just such a bummer to me, because I think this movie made a lot of great points. It was really beautiful. I think that it did such a great job with Simu and Awkwafina's relationship and like friendship and the will they won't they of that. And then with the dad, I think a big colossal mistake of theirs as well though was, I think that they told us too early that the mom was dead, in terms of once we knew she was dead, but he was hearing her voices.
Yeah.
I think they should have left it as more of a mystery so that when he comes there, we don't know what's real or what's not. But the second we get there, the aunt's like, that's not true.
Yeah, bullshit. There's this giant. And it's like, and again, like we get into the whole complications of like the mom and the secret land and all this other stuff. And it's just like, no, I just want to see Shang-Chi deal with his dad stuff. And then we set up like Death Dealer, the guy that with the mask that trains him, that's supposed to, seems like in the trailers, he's like the biggest fucking badass. He goes out like a chump with one of the souls. And it's like, oh, well, that guy didn't matter. Why did we literally spend any time with that character? Because he does not matter.
I liked the land. I liked whatever that pillow looking animal was. I liked the Ben Kingsley stuff. I liked learning about the mom's land. I want to spend more time there. I felt like it was like our version of Themyscira, where I just was like, wow, this is all so beautiful. And I really liked all that stuff because it still felt character related, like more stories, bigger, like this aunt, what did she have to do with it? She was waiting for them to come. What does that mean? Are they hoping that they stay there, take over? Like there was just so many questions. And I was like, ooh, I'm so into this. It's really not until we are going to take all of our characters out. And this is for the next 20 minutes. This is CG time, baby.
Yeah.
We are only in CG land. I was like, no, take me back. Take me back. Yeah. I don't want to be here.
And then like
Fear of the Dragon.
Yeah. I don't. And I just think it would have been a much more engaging film if we just because think about what they abandon. They abandon the fact that the dad has magical space rings that, again, we go back to in the comics, each one of them does a different thing. You could literally do anything with those rings. He also leads what seems to be the largest criminal slash terrorist organization that has ever existed in the MCU. And yeah. We do nothing with that.
Yeah, I did think the fight with the dad and Shang-Chi was sick.
Yeah,
I thought that was so cool.
You're talking about at the end.
Yeah.
Outside, but it's again for me. It was like it's still big CG. Like, it's not. It doesn't have the tangible. Like I think about like the bus fight. I think about the fight on the side of the tower. Like there's
this bus fight was incredible. Holy crap!
And there's a lot of CG.
Oh my god, the scaffolding fight was unreal.
And of course, I'm not naive. I know there's a lot of CG in that too. But there's a tangible quality. There's a real there's a physical aspect and the way they depict Shang-Chi moving, which leads to my another disappointment. You mentioned like we still don't know everything about the Ten Rings. That is true, but they no longer belong to Wenwu because he's dead. So we're not gonna get the Mandarin. Like we're just not. Like we've had three chances now.
We're going to learn about the rings.
But now they belong to
Shang-Chi.
Yeah, but I don't want Shang-Chi to have superpowers. He's much more engaging as just the sickest fighter. Like the Shang-Chi they sold me at the beginning of the movie in the bus fight and the scaffolding fight. And it's like, yeah, that guy I'm way invested in. Magical Ten Rings Kamehameha Shang-Chi. It's like, I don't care about this guy.
Oh, I dig that. I dig that. And I also think like deciding when to use them, when not, if you should keep them on, if you should keep them off. I think they've set up a world in which I really care about. I care about the aunt. I care about him and his sister. I care about him and his best friend. I'm like loving moving forward with this. I like the end of it too, where even though, you know, I can't effing stand Doctor Strange, I like knowing what we're doing. Yeah. And feels like, although I have no idea why they are including Awkwafina in that, I want her there. But like, why when we go get him, yeah. We're like, we need you too.
Also, question about like, what is the deal with Wong and Abomination? Are they working together? That was so confusing to me that they're in the fight ring, but they're also working together. And then they go to like what looks like a lab. Like he opens a portal and it looks like they walk into a lab. And it's like, what am I supposed to get out of this?
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know with that. But I even like the with the sister. Now she's taking over. And
yes, which I that. Let's go into the after credit scenes. Because we're already kind of touching on them. You mentioned, so Shang-Chi and Katie are taking a car montage by Wong. And the after credits scene is we get Wong with Captain Marvel played by Brie Larson and Bruce Banner played by Mark Ruffalo with his arm in a sling. And both of them look like they just literally stumbled out of their trailer. Somebody threw the costume on real quick. And it's like, hey, let's go. And they're trying to deduce the origin of the Ten Rings. Apparently, when Shang-Chi used them, they sent out a signal, which I'm assuming, honestly, when they were building up to the Dweller in Darkness, I'm like, oh, fing, fing, foom. And then it wasn't. It was some other generic bullshit. And then I think the signal is setting up fing, fang, foom for a sequel, which the only thing I'm excited about them saving that for a sequel as opposed to doing it in this movie is that maybe now that Suicide Squad's out, they'll pull a Starro and he looks exactly like he looks in the comics. Like it's just big CGI version of that as opposed to whatever the hell we got at the end of Shang-Chi. It's like, don't make Fing Fang Foom the Dweller in Darkness. I don't want to see more of this shit. I want to, if you're going to do it, go big, go goofy, make it look like fucking Jack Kirby's Fing Fang Foom or whoever. I don't know. I don't know if Jack Kirby designed Fing Fang Foom. Yeah, I have to look that up. So that's the first after credit scene. And the other one you mentioned is, and this one interested me significantly more because I felt like we dropped hints at it. We set up such an interesting relationship with Shang and his sister. And that's the heart of the movie. I want more of that. And Zhao Ling takes over the army of the Ten Rings in her father's stead. And it's like, yeah, listen, I love comics. Show me Fing Fang Foom. Sure. I don't give a shit about that. I'd rather see Shang-Chi deal with this. I'm much more invested about whatever's going on there.
Now that she can, this might be the dumbest comment ever. I don't know because I haven't thought it through, but this is how I felt. Now that she can train women because she's in charge and she's like, women can train with men and that's fine. Don't you want her to train the Black Widow?
The new one? Sure.
No, all of them. Remember how the Black Widow gets kicked out at the end? I hope that's where they're going.
Them to be going there. Except I hope we don't make her a good guy. This should be a bad thing. I thought it was interesting.
She's a bad guy?
Yeah, I mean, that's more interesting because when she talks to Awkwafina and she's like, yeah, when my dad wouldn't let me part of his empire, I wanted my own. And it's like, well, and Awkwafina like treats that as a positive thing. It's like, no, empires are bad. So that's bad. It doesn't matter if she's leading it or dad's leading it. Empires are bad.
And no, I want her to be a good, I don't want her to be a bad guy.
No, but I think it's more interesting. Again, that's a more interesting family drama that we kind of abandoned in this movie that we could explore here. And it's also a good opportunity to kind of like deconstruct girl boss bullshit. Like that kind of like, it's like, it doesn't, if you're doing the same thing the guy is doing, it's still bad. It doesn't matter that you're a woman. It's still negative.
Yeah. I wonder what's going to happen with the aunt and what was the name of the place that we went with them?
I don't even know. And I think because it's invented to this, as of this recording, we're not, nobody's talking about it yet. I don't know. I don't remember.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever that place was, I would like to explore that more in the future.
Yeah.
I am interested. I like the pillow creature.
Yeah.
I thought that he was cute.
Yeah. How is he talking to Trevor Slattery?
He's talking to him with energy.
Yeah.
It's a vibe. It's a bop,
so
DJ.
It's tough. It's tough for me because I wonder, do I hate the back half more because of how much I liked the first half? Because it is like, I think the back half of Shang-Chi's probably the worst thing MCU's ever done. I would rather watch Thor 2 than the back half of Shang-Chi.
Wow. Yeah, I do not feel that way at all. I liked it.
Yeah.
I just didn't like the dragon stuff.
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, but it's not just the dragon. I mean, everything looks cool, like that I think they're called the Imperial Lions. And you've got
Those are sick.
They're kitsune in Japan, the nine-tailed foxes. There's a different name for them in China, and I don't remember off the top of my head. Like, I like all that stuff.
About the forest stuff, like going through the forest, turning left, right. That, like, did you like the way that looked, or you were not into that?
I didn't want any of the magic stuff. I just wanted to see. I wanted to unpack. Okay, so Dad led the Ten Rings. He hasn't been doing it. He didn't do it whenever he was with Shang-Chi's mom. Now it's back. What does that mean? How does that apply to the MCU? What does that mean for the, what does that organization mean? What does it mean for the history of this universe? What are the nature of the Ten Rings? It raised so many interesting, I wanted to spend, this is your big time to sell us on Shang-Chi. And so to abandon that character and his relationship with his dad in the back half of the movie just feels grievous. It just feels like a huge missed opportunity to invest in stuff that feels solely designed to sell toys. That bums me out. So and that's, I think that's why it's like, yeah, by the way, Fing Fang Foom was created by Jack Kirby. I got that right. Thanks. But like, sure. If they should bring up Fing Fang Foom in the sequel, the comic fan in me is going to be like that, but I'm more interested to see. I want to unpack the relationship with Shang-Chi and his sister more. I want to spend more time with the characters. I think there's more and less in like all the fantasy world stuff. I wasn't invested in that.
I think we had the opposite because for me, the first half, first two thirds, honestly, were so strong that it makes me not care about the portion that I didn't like as much, as opposed to feel more disappointed by it. I'm like, okay, so much of this movie I loved so much that I feel good about it still, as opposed to you, where you loved it so much and then it fell off such a cliff for you and for much longer that it seems like you're like more bummed.
And I think part of that is that's where I left the movie. You know, that's the back half of the movie. So like the freshest memory is all the, is the elements I didn't like. And again, it makes me think about like, I wonder what the critical reception will be. I wonder what, because like, obviously mileage may vary. People have different expectations, different things that interest them and stuff like that. But I think like, something like Black Widow has narratively problematic elements, but at least it's cohesive. The movie it sets up is the movie.
Black Widow.
Yeah. One hands down, because the movie it sets up, I preferred Snake Eyes, honestly, because the movie it sets up is the movie it delivers. It commits to like, this is what we're talking about. These are the characters we're talking about. These are the relationship we're talking about. It's not like the spoilers for Snake Eyes. It's not like the two giant snakes that show up in Snake Eyes suddenly become the whole thing that we're fighting. Like, it's like, no, the villain we're fighting is the villain we set up in the beginning, and it's all about those relationships. That's what matters. And again, not that there aren't narrative problems with those movies. All these big blockbusters, because they're made by committee, kind of feel like they're being made up on the fly. Like they get like the script's being written as they're shooting it, kind of a thing. You know what I mean? Like, that's a problem with every big budget blockbuster that's been coming out for the last 10 plus years.
Yeah.
But stuff like Black Widow, stuff like Snake Eyes feels more cohesive. And so I enjoy them more, and maybe possibly it's also they're more grounded. Like if you look at the Marvel shows, I mean, I enjoy Falcon and Winter Soldier more than WandaVision, more than Loki. And that shows, I don't know that like Marvel has cracked its more magical stuff in a way that interests me personally.
But you like Doctor Strange.
No, actually, I don't dislike it as much as
you.
You
with me?
Oh. I like Doctor Strange, the character. I think the movie, and again, it goes back to like Doctor Strange's abilities are so unique and so specifically could be visually engaging. And so like and I get what they wanted to do. What they wanted to do was make magic tangible, but by limiting it to like making swords and making whips, it's like, well, that's boring. Like that's not it's not like you want people to put the same in Legion. We've talked about it, had its problems narratively, especially in the end of season two and going into season three. But when it went to like psychic battles, it wasn't just people throwing multicolored goop at each other. They did the dance competitions and they did visually interesting and engaging things. And it's like you literally can do anything. You have the money to do anything. It kind of goes back to, in a way, and I love this movie. But like Polka Dot Man in the comics, each of his dots do a different thing. And so in the Suicide Squad, it's just blah, blah, dots and they just melt things. And it's like that movie, it's a little bit more forgivable because we're doing a lot in that movie. We don't have a lot of time to do whatever. But it does still feel like a missed opportunity to like his powers are extra dimensional. Like maybe he's pulling stuff. Like maybe like each time he uses a different dot, it pulls a different thing. And that could be visually engaging in a way. That again, like it bums me out that like no matter what the ability is, the studio will dumb it down into like, hey, here's magic CG goop, and it's like, well, I don't know, do something a little bit different. Let's get into our questions. Leonard Kim, based off this movie, how much of a factor do you think Shang-Chi will be in the next phase of the MCU?
A big one.
Yeah, for real. I mean, you don't trot out Captain Marvel and Hulk at the end of your movie if you're not trying to really like sell people on like, no, this is an Avengers level dude.
I think for 15 reasons. Number one, where we end this movie, not only do I think most people are going to really love Simu Liu's performance and really like him.
Yeah.
So we're sold on Shang-Chi as a character, but he also now has the 10 rings.
Yeah.
So he's got all the powers, and our post-credit scenes specifically bring him into our Avengers like almost fully.
Yes.
So for all of those reasons, they clearly are planning on having him be at that level.
Yeah.
And I think they should. I think the best part about Shang-Chi was Shang-Chi.
Agreed.
So that's cool. and we like the character and moving forward. I'm curious how much Awkwafina, what is it, Katie?
Katie, yeah.
I'm curious how much Katie's going to be part of it, because it seems like not only is Shang-Chi going to be part of the Avengers, but it seems like they have big plans for Katie.
That'll be interesting. You make a really good point, because there's a reason they kind of like drag her in there. I mean, they probably bring her in there so they could do that lame karaoke joke at the end. It is interesting the way they position her as part of that. And it'll probably be like every other supporting character in, like, is Pepper going to show up or is Jane Foster going to show up? It's like, well, we'll see if the schedules align. Right. When you do like a crossover, you know what I mean? Like, ah, we'll see if the schedules align. Do you think, because this goes back to the larger question you raised when we talked about Eternals in the last episode, about like, since we don't know if we're getting like an Avengers or an Ultimates, or like, are we going to see Shang-Chi next in Secret Invasion? Or are we going to see him next in Shang-Chi 2? Like, clearly, if we do another big team that's not Young Avengers, he's going to be there. If whatever the next Avengers is, you know, Captain Marvel, presumably a Black Panther, Shang-Chi's going to be in that group, whatever that is.
You don't think he's going to be in Multiverse of Madness?
That's a good question, because it's Wong, right?
Yeah.
Although on paper, I like that idea. We've already got so much going on in Multiverse of Madness, and I'm worried that that movie's not going to be like a story. It's just going to be like cameo central. Like, hey, here's all the, you know what I mean? It's like, I like Shang-Chi. I'd like to see him, but we've also got Wanda. We've also got America Chavez. We've also got like whatever, if they're going to dump any stuff from What If in there, it's like, there's a lot going on in Multiverse of Madness.
Yeah. Well, what do we have coming up? We have Spider-Man coming up.
Yes.
We have Multiverse coming up. Yes. We have Eternals coming up.
Yeah. As far as the movies go, that's as far as I know. The biggest opportunity for like a big crossover I can see is Secret Invasion, which is a Disney Plus show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I kind of think he's going to show up in Doctor Strange.
I don't know why I'm asking that. Like, wouldn't we have heard about it? And literally, reviews aren't allowed to go out. As of this recording, reviews aren't allowed to go out. So it's like, we'll probably, if he is, we'll probably hear about it like a week after the movie releases.
Yeah. I did think it was interesting, too, that Benedict Cumberbatch wasn't in this movie.
I mean, I think it's, one, I like Benedict Wong as an actor a lot. So anytime he shows up in something, I enjoy it.
And as a person, too. He's just awesome.
Met him?
Yeah. Cool. I interviewed him. He actually follows me. And the fact that, what a calling card for me, the fact that him and Simu both follow me, I feel like I'm a queen. I'm a queen.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the point. But I think he is like salt of the earth.
Thank
genuinely
God.
Like just awesome dude. So yeah, I think he's great. And I loved seeing him here. And I like his character way more than I like Doctor Strange. I don't like Doctor Strange's character. So I was so much happier with this. But I was just kind of surprised, because if you're able to get Mark Ruffalo and you're able to get Brie Larson,
yeah,
then maybe it was a scheduling thing, or maybe they didn't want him. I don't know.
Well, I think it's also like, is there even he's like the one Asian character they got is Wong before this movie. So it makes sense that he would be the one in there. And again, I don't dislike Doctor Strange the way you do, but I like, again, Benedict Wong and Wong. And so I just think Benedict Wong does interesting things. I just find him an interesting actor to watch. So I think that's probably the main reason that it's more, and also to avoid any like, here's a white guy telling you how magic works, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, let's get our other Asian character in there to be the one that kind of like, because it's not really a mentorship role, but it could become that if they wanted it to be.
Yeah true. Very yeah. True.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see that by the time this episode drops, as of this recording, we have no idea what Shang-Chi's going to show up in next. By the time this episode drops, we might have an announcement that he's going to be in Multiverse of Madness as well.
Yeah.
Literally everybody's going to be in that movie. When does that come out?
I think it comes out in the next year. have no idea.
Let's find out. When looking it up right now. It's supposed to come out in, oh my goodness,
I really don't know.
Oh my God. Roxy, I want you to to make a guess. I want you to make a guess.
Okay, so we know Eternals is in November. When is Spider-Man Far From Home?
Like December. It's like December.
December. What's it called? Spider-Man what?
No Way Home. No Way Home.
Okay, so then I'm guessing that this is... Well, we haven't seen anything. Summer, June?
March 25th, 2022.
March. Yeah, I was giving it till June, but March, wow.
That's nuts. That's crazy. That's crazy. That's so soon. That's stupid soon.
Do we even know, have they wrapped?
I have no idea. I have no idea. At this point, it's hard to keep track because with the shows and the movies and everything, it's like they're just filming stuff all the time. And
yeah,
of course,
with
the COVID of it, like you would have thought they would have taken this chance to be like, listen, we're just delaying everything a year. And it's like, no, everything's going to, we're just going to pile it on each other. It's like every couple of months, you're going to have a new Marvel movie in theaters.
Yeah, I genuinely don't know. Like, are they wrapped? They're obviously in post in some way, right? I mean, March.
They would have to be March. Like, well, and again, that's the other thing that I think, like, a big way that blockbusters are made now is a lot of elements are in previs before sometimes even directors are hired. And so that's another part of my feeling in the back half. It felt like, you know, they at some point in the stage, they brought in some sort of creator, and that person was like, okay, I've got all these ideas for Shang-Chi. And they're like, oh, great. But also, we bankrupt 3 CG studios to make this world that he's going to show up in, so find a way to fit that in there. There's a big dragon battle. You'll figure it out. Go get the Kraken. But I do want to say before we wrap up, I know that the back half of Shang-Chi is really tough for me. That said, Simu Liu truly is. I totally agree with Roxy. He's the best part of the movie, but not just that. The whole cast across the board, great. Want to see more of these characters. Wouldn't mind seeing them in different situations more similar to the front half of the movie. But that said, I do hope this movie does well because I like the character. I think I'd like to see him a part of the wider MCU. And I'd like to see more of him and the cast of characters around him. Again, his sister was a big standout for me. I'd like to see them butt heads more and like flesh that relationship out more. But whatever they do, I'd like to see more of that. So I did have a hard time with aspects of this movie, but I do hope it does well. And I do like the character a lot. And I like, of course, I like Simu Liu. That's why they cast him. He's a super likable boy.
Yeah. And the other thing that we haven't spoken that much about is like, I did take my best friend to this and she is Asian and she thought this movie was like as close to perfect as a movie could be. And that was so cool for her to be able to have that. And like, we talked a lot about the dragon stuff and she was saying to me, like, I love anything that's like part of the culture. And that was so like such a cool cultural moment for me. And I was like, wow. So maybe that stuff just was not for me. And parts of movies are allowed to not be for me, especially if they're positively being received by the people who need that movie the most, want that movie the most, and can relate to that movie the most. So
absolutely.
Although you and I might not prefer some of the CG stuff, there was a lot of like stuff apparently in this mystical land that were really, really just not for me and you.
Yeah.
And were for people that it deserves to be for. So like, I was really happy to know that she thought this movie was effing flaw, like just the greatest thing that ever took place.
That's
and so
cool.
I'm hoping that the reception, we don't know yet because we, at this point of this recording, we don't know, but I'm hoping that how our Black friends felt about Black Panther and like had just been waiting so long to fucking have that movie.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that our Asian friends feel about Shang-Chi. And I'm hoping that this is the start of many feelings like that for people who are not you and me. And even though I loved this movie, I am okay taking an L on 20 minutes if it's a W for them. So
100%. I think you're totally right. I will be interested to see how that community, though, the multiple communities react to that, because I do think you look at something like Black Panther and I think the way it tackled that culture felt more nuanced and lived in than what Shang-Chi did. So I will be interested to see how the general response is for that, whether they do feel like they're being represented or whether they feel like they're being pandered to.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because like you mentioned, like you and I are not we're not able to communicate with it on that level. And I think that's a, really good point, that hopefully those people, whenever you do, whenever these studios do stuff to try and represent people, you hope it lands at least on that level, that the people that don't normally get to star in the big superhero blockbuster movie get their shot, and it's able to do that for them.
Right.
So yeah, I think I totally agree with you. So now it's time to wrap up. Roxy, remind the kids at home where they can find you and what you're up to.
Everywhere at Roxy Stryer. I tweet out all the things I'm doing, but in case you need a reminder, every day live at Roxy 1 p.m., World Girl Wednesday and Sunday at 6 p.m. and 7 p.m. And I also do SEN on Tuesday mornings and Only Stupid Answers on Friday with DJ.
Yay. You're all over the place. So please go check all that out. If you aren't already, what are you doing? Go follow her. Go do that. You can find me at DJ Talks Trash, and you can find the show at Only Stupid Answers everywhere that matters, but on Twitter.
You got the vowel from stupid.
Thank you all for joining us. We will be back next week with more stuff, so stay tuned for all that, and let us know what you thought about Shang-Chi in the tweet. Bye, everybody. Bye-bye.